This is a sound test at the New Hampshire Supreme Court on February 13, 2001.
Testing judges, microphone one, judge microphone two, and the PA system microphone. This concludes the sound test.
May it please the court, I'm Joshua Gordon. I represent the plaintiff, Elizabeth Graham. She fell in a hole in defendant's barn and landed in a pile of manure. My client couldn't be here today because of the icy conditions in Nova Scotia, and she asked me to pass on her apologies to the court for her absence. The law regarding the number of jurors is simple and settled. There has to be 12. To be fewer, each juror reduction must be specifically waived. State versus Ellard requires that the trial judge request an explicit waiver. A waiver of the 12-person jury does not mean a court can thereafter reduce it to any number it chooses. If you waive 12, does that mean you might wind up with just one? No one would ever waive. On appeal, the defendant argues that the juror issue was not preserved. Plaintiff's trial counsel told me that he objected in chambers, but unfortunately chambers conference wasn't, steno wasn't there or didn't take it down. But the evidence in the existing record makes clear that there was an objection. In the transcript, page 198, plaintiff's attorney set out his position, complaining about the suggestion to excuse the juror. He then went on to offer a compromise in which the soon-to-be-excused juror would stay in the courthouse in case yet another juror had to go. The court didn't accept the compromise and instead excused the juror. The importance of the compromise proposal here, however, is why would an attorney be offering a compromise if there was no disagreement? You need the existence of differing positions in order for a compromise to be relevant. The evidence on the record shows that plaintiff's trial attorney objected to the diminished jury at that point. Immediately after the trial, even the defendant believed that the issue had been preserved. Upon the verdict, trial attorney, plaintiff filed a motion to set aside the verdict, and the defendant objected, both those in the notice of appeal. In his objection, the defendant raised a number of procedural issues, but not the preservation issue, which, if existed, would have been so obvious. In his objection, the defendant also argued the merits of the juror issue. The plaintiff's waiver of the previous jurors meant that you waived the final juror too, the issue he's arguing on appeal. What the defendant indicated then, before the benefit of seeing the transcript, is the accurate version. And the defendant only discovered the preservation argument after he saw the transcript and its unfortunate missing the words, "I object." The words are missing, but the objection is there. Now let me turn to the facts. The defendant acknowledged all the facts to establish his own negligence. He invited the plaintiff into his barn. He invited her to that spot in the barn to see his pigs. There was a hole right in front of the pig pen. The hole was normally covered for safety purposes. The cover had been removed for cleaning. The uncovered hole was a dangerous condition. The vicinity was dimly lit. The defendant didn't warn the plaintiff of the danger. The defendant knew that my client was elderly, frail, and had Parkinson's disease, which in layman's terms means that your mind functions fine, but your body doesn't necessarily follow smoothly. The defendant acknowledged that there was a pile of manure, and that the plaintiff was the whole walking at the pigs, that she found manure, and that she sustained injuries. The defendant admits all of this. The only contributory negligence alleged by the defendant was how the plaintiff pulled herself up to peer at the pigs. But she had been invited to the pig pen at that spot precisely for the purpose of looking at the pigs. It was error to hold her liable for falling into the hole that the defendant put there in front of the spectacle which he invited her to see. I suggest that the reason for the verdict was not the plaintiff's negligence, but that the jury was confused by the plaintiff's apparent exaggeration of what happened after the fall. And you can see my brief at page 9 in the transcript for all those facts. The verdict here was conclusively against the weight of the evidence and should have been set aside. But this court need not ever reach the evidence because the substandard jury was a violation of Ms. Graham's constitutional rights. and the verdict should have been set aside on those grounds. Be happy to take questions, since I only have a few moments.
Are you saying that what happened here is the judge in opposition decided to conduct deliberations with 10 jurors? I mean, isn't it more logical that if there had been a preserved objection, the judge would not have let it go? Doesn't it look here like the judge assumed that everybody agreed to go with fewer than 12 and that included 10 in this case?
Well, I don't think there was violent objection, but I think it's at least apparent that trial attorney made his unsatisfaction clear. Whether the objection never got on the record, but he wouldn't have offered a compromise if there wasn't something to disagree about.
If you wanted to stop, you're a practicing lawyer, you want to stop the trial right now. I mean, don't you get the court reporter in? And isn't that the most significant thing you would want to do?
One would hope that attorney would do that.
We held in the State versus Hewitt that in order to waive a 12-person jury, the court had to address the defendant personally.
Yes.
In a criminal case.
Yes.
I guess I have two questions. First of all, does that apply here in a civil case?
I think the constitutional right to the jury is identical. So I think Hewitt and I think Ellard also makes the same issue ought to apply.
And did that happen here? Was the plaintiff personally addressed by the court?
Plaintiff, I believe, was not in the courtroom and was clearly addressed by the court.
So that, I guess the issue is whether we apply the same standard of waiver in this case as we apply in a criminal case to the waiver of a 12-person jury.
I proceeded on the assumption that the two are identical, but the issue has not been decided in the state.
Right, Ellard is a civil case, and
it's criminal.
Predates Hewitt by 15 or 20 years.
I believe Ellard is criminal as well.
Ellard is criminal?
I think so.
Oh, it is?
That should do it.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Your Honor, Richard Mitchell for the appellee and defendant. Mr. Glover, I was trial counsel. There was no in-chambers conversation concerning this. We were standing in the courtroom after lunch and the juror was brought into the courtroom. I cannot swear that the tape was started immediately, but when you look at the transcript, you'll see that the juror started his story and his question at the outset of that hearing. There was no in-chambers conference. I do not recall if Mrs. Graham was in the courtroom, but she was in the courthouse. And I'm reminded of the words from the State versus Ellard case. It seems that the defendant, having taken his chances on being acquitted by 11 men and lost, now seeks to try again. Mrs. Graham was in the courtroom when the jury went from 12 to 11. This jury actually started with 13. After opening statements, somebody realized through a hole in the garage. After her direct testimony, a juror came out and said, I think I worked with Mrs. Graham. They identified each other, shook hands. At that point, Attorney Wanger, Mrs. Graham, all agreed to go forward with 11 jurors. So the 12-person jury was waived at that point. There was no objection to 10. As a matter of fact, you'll see on page 199 of the transcript, that Attorney Wanger says, but I think we have people coming up at the beginning of trial with less directly correlating instances that were excused. There are two parts of this juror's prejudice, or the things that concerned Judge Brennan and myself. One was that his brother had a slip and fall, sued for it. The other, and this was a key to this case from the outset, was that he was suing a friend. Mrs. Graham was suing a friend of some 30 years. So the prejudice of this juror was both the experience with a relative having a slip and fall lawsuit and also the fact that the lawsuit was on personal premises against a friend. And that's what Attorney Wanger meant when he said, at the beginning, we excused people with less correlating problems. I do not recall any objection being spoken. Mrs. Graham lived in Nova Scotia then. She was staying at a motel here in New Hampshire during the course of the trial. She had come down mediation. She had expressed widely the concern about the expense for all of this. Having a new trial would have meant going back to Nova Scotia, coming back and going through it again. And that was the concern of counsel. Regarding the weight of the evidence, the jury went on a view, and this case was filled with peculiarities, from going from 13 jurors to 10, to going on a view where the defendant is in the process of milking cows while the jury went through the barn. He wasn't opening statements, he wasn't a previous statements, because he said, Attorney Mitchell, I got to get my cows done, and I'm the only guy on the farm. So when the jury went through, they literally walked through a working dairy barn. And I argued that to the jury. And I argued, and in cross-examination, I brought that up to Mrs. Graham. You're familiar with barns, are you not? And she was raised on a farm. And you realize that there are risks, and there are dangerous tools and implements. The jury saw all this. The jury saw an open and apparent hole in the floor large enough for a woman, full-grown woman, to fall through. One of the arguments that was brought up is not quite accurate. Mr. Glover did not invite her to view the pigs from where she was. As I'm standing here, if this podium is the area where the pigs were kept, there was a door. And they stood in front of the door and looked at the pigs. They then moved away to the side, and the gutters came and ended right here alongside. It was here, and not drawn to by Mr. Glover, that Mrs. Graham stepped up over the hole, couldn't reach according to Ms. Parks, and stepped back in. She had a duty for her own protection. She talked about how she carried a flashlight that night. Didn't need to turn it on. There's plenty of light. She testified that because of her Parkinson's, she always was extra careful where she stepped. And yet somehow she didn't see this hole in the floor. To walk through, she had to walk across steel planks, steel plates that made a large amount of noise, across the gutters. There's plenty of evidence on comparative negligence. There was never an objection to the comparative negligence instruction. Never an objection to the comparative negligence special verdict form, and never a motion for directive verdict on the comparative negligence issue. It was clear to everyone that was being argued, and there was evidence for it. That's my time if there are questions.
Let me ask you the same question I asked Mr. Gordon. What is your view as to whether or not we ought to apply the Hewitt standard that requires the judge to personally address the person to a civil case?
I agree with Attorney Gordon. I don't see a difference between, I think the constitutional right does not distinguish between civil and criminal. Here, I think the 12-person constitutional right was directly waived by Mrs. Graham.
Personally?
Did personally.
You say personally, on the record, I waive my right to a 12-person jury?
I can't recall, but she was in the courtroom when the 11th juror was excused.
I know, but that was true in Hewitt. And the judge said to the lawyer, do you waive the 12-person jury? And the lawyer said, yes, I do. And the client didn't say anything. And we found that that was an insufficient waiver. And so if that standard applies, it seems to me that you got a problem.
I honestly cannot recall, and I don't think it's on the record. It was. I don't know if there's a stenographer there or not, but I would direct the court to the language in Ellard, where this was experienced counsel. This is a very intelligent woman with a college degree, paralegal experience, postgraduate degrees, and she was standing in the courtroom when the judge said, along with 11. So I don't know. I cannot stand here and say Mrs. Graham said, yes, 11 is okay or not. But.
Well, I understand the language in Ellard, just that Ellard predates Hewitt.
Thank you, Counselor. Case submitted. Thank you.